Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Poinsine. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us again for our podcast this week. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. This week, we're happy to have with us Christian Tapanaho. He is the CEO of Uni. It's a company that started as an idea back in 2012 and has grown into a multi-million dollar organization. He has some great thoughts he's going to share about how he and his wife built the company from scratch, from an idea, and now is a successful company and continuing to grow. Looking forward to hearing about his entrepreneurial journey, and I know you'll enjoy this podcast. Christian, it's great to have you joining us from near Edinburgh, Scotland, and you're our first podcast. We've had some from England and France, but you're the first from Scotland. It's great to have you.
Hey, thanks very much, Mark, for having me.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, good. Well, kind of my story of hearing about your company is just a while back, my kids and my wife got me one of your pizza ovens for Father's Day. So a big shout out to them for doing that. And I was curious about your company and heard some good things about your product, but would love to hear your story of kind of how you started the company, a little bit of your background.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Hey, thanks very much. That's a great gift you've received, I think. I'd like to say. So a little bit about the background. Let's see, how far do you go? So I'm of Finnish origin, originally from Finland, moved to the UK about 2002 to study photography. So I always had I grew up in a supermarket, and I had a quite a good sort of working from very young age upbringing. My great grandmother started the supermarket. My grandfather then continued on it, and my parents worked there, and I worked there when I was very young, and then moved to UK to England to study photography because I had a passion for that sort of creative outlet in doing that. And that was how I ended up on this island. And fast forward a couple of years, I'd met my now wife, and we'd already been working together on our own other business pretty much since we graduated from university. And I just got really into making pizza and started exploring different ways of getting better at it and creating the perfect dough mixes and the sauces and so on, and quickly found out that, well, one of the key things of making a great pizza rather than just a good pizza is to have the high temperatures that you get in a traditional Italian sort of wood-fired oven. And now this is about 10 years ago, and we've really changed the market what it is today. We've really brought it forward. So back then, you couldn't go into a store and buy anything that was remotely affordable or in any way portable. So I started looking around that, well, if nobody's actually making a product that I would like to buy, well, what would it take for me to then actually go out and just see if it's possible? Is there a reason that no one's made it before apart from the fact that nobody's just bothered? So that's the very beginning of Unis, was just to really scratch my own itch in creating a better experience in making wood-fired pizzas in our backyard.
Great. Well, yeah, when I first heard the story, I thought, I need to hear the story of how somebody in Scotland has developed a great pizza grill or oven. So that's a great story. So tell me a little bit in the beginning. How did you, it sounds like your wife and you were kind of sat down at probably a kitchen table or somewhere just to come up with the idea. But tell us those early days of now you have a multi-million dollar operation and employees.
No, absolutely. Yeah, so I can get to where we're at the moment, but it really started as that kind of spark of an idea that, look, this product doesn't exist, and I bet you if I'd want one of these, I think there might be other people who'd want one of these as well. So it was, I've been thinking about it for a couple, maybe a month or 2 months in back in 2011, and I started making some sketches on it. I had the first ever iPad back then with a pen that I was kind of doing a little bit of drafting and kind of bit of spitballing of the idea, what could it be and how to make it work. Because you're taking a traditional oven that's 300 kilograms or, I don't know, half a ton of brick and mortar, and you're trying to squeeze this into something that's very, very compact, but still performs to the level that you'd expect. So that was really kind of like just trying to problem solve that part of how do we get this, what do we need the heat for, how do we get around with not having that thermal mass there. One of the kind of guidelines or borders that I set for myself in the beginning was that I want to be able to send this through just regular parcel post. In fact, I had 10 kilograms was the absolute upper limit, because I was making, where I was making this, that was the limit of sending. And if it had gone up over by 1 gram, the postage would have gone up by about 30 euros or about $35. So that was, then that's actually, there's a funny little story around that, why we have three legs on our products, is that the original Uni would have gone over 10 kilos if it had four legs. So it's a bit of a happy accident in that it's actually three legs. It's obviously, it's a tripod. It makes it more balanced when you have it on an even slightly uneven surface. So that was it. It was a lot of problem solving and kind of coming up with the idea of how to reduce the thermal mass. And at the same time, I've been really interested. I've been following the kind of what's happening on the internet. I've been a big follower of technology news for much longer than I've been doing this. And so I knew about Kickstarter as a crowdfunding way of starting an idea and making it happen into a company, and trying to see if there's a literal crowd out there that would want to back you and help you get it off the ground. So at the same time, I was looking at that as a way of seeing if this had legs, this idea.
Great. Well, that's a great story. And as an entrepreneur, just to have that idea and to see it kind of materialize and be able to get it out to the market. So I ask this question of almost every guest that we have on, if you were knowing what you know now, if you're able to go back and talk to a 22-year-old Christian, what would you tell him?
Ooh.
Yeah, and that hasn't been that long ago for you. So, no.
Well, I was 30 when I started at this, and I'm now going to hit 40 soon. So, it's been a while. 22. I just moved to UK. I think it's like any of these good things that have happened in my life have been through making connections with other people. And I think that's one of the things that I would say is that, and I've not been bad. I'm not too shy of a person. I'm a little bit of an introvert, but I'd say to myself that just go out and meet more people through your life. My wife is, she's got a superpower. Drina's got a superpower of being a connector with people. She can go in and make friends really well, and she does it in a most genuine way. And I think if there's one advice I would give to any young people or person or myself is to just make, not necessarily friends, but make connections, meet new people, because from diversity of thought and diversity of conversation, new ideas come to.
So tell us a little bit about, you have a oven behind you. I think that's the same one that I have, but talk through just a little bit. It gets up to, is it 500 Celsius? So about 932
Fahrenheit. Yeah. Absolutely. So the idea was really, so domestic ovens get only about 450 Fahrenheit. The secret behind fantastic pizza is all about the temperature. And for a Neapolitan style pizza, it's about that very, very high temperature. So you're talking about 850, 500, 950 degrees Fahrenheit that you want to hit. And the kind of innovation that we have in our ovens is that they're compact, but they're super powerful. They just get really, really hot, really, really fast. And there's a lot of other things there that we use to then keep hold of as much of that heat as possible without actually then adding too much thermal mass, aka just weight, into these products. So it's easy to make a traditional oven because you're just putting brick on top of brick and then put a fire inside it. But these are really engineered to burn very, very efficiently and burn very cleanly. So there's very limited amount of smoke that actually comes from, because we're just combusting so much of the fuel inside there.
Well, I know it's amazing. I used to do pizzas on our grill, and to be able to put it in and like 2 minutes later, you're ready to go. It's been a lot of fun to try to get it, hone it down and get it.
We call it the uni effect, is that where you get this incredible, like when you show this to people for the first time, and they're used to just making pizzas in their home oven, and it's like it's 7, 8, 10 minutes that it takes. And then they say, they've heard that, okay, well, these can cook a pizza in 60 seconds. And they're like, yeah, sure, why not? And then when they see it, it's like, whoa, that's really, really fast.
Yeah, it's really good. And so I have to ask you, what's your favorite pizza? You're probably not going to say haggis, are you?
No, I won't say haggis. I will say black pudding, though. I go quite traditional. So I'll go with Napoletana, which is usually anchovies, bit of capers, and maybe black olives, no cheese, just like a marinara sauce. So quite straight, quite sharp flavors from the anchovies. Of course, that before my kind of Neapolitan style. Then if it's a New York style pizza, then it's like a pepperoni New York style. It's just really, really awesome. But I like all pizzas. We actually just had a campaign last week for the Hawaiian Pizza Day, which is a bit of a day that we kind of came up with to celebrate the inventor's birthday. The guy who invented the Hawaiian pizza, his birthday was last week. So I like pineapple and pizza as well. If that'll now have lost half of our listeners here.
No, it's a great combination. When I was in Scotland, it was the first time that I ever had I think corn on a pizza. Wherever we were at, they put corn in. I thought, oh, I've never thought of doing that. So
no,
but I've got my Edinburgh castle sitting on my desk.
Oh,
so
very cool.
Anyway, yeah, my grandsons love to play with it. But if you were to go back and knowing again what you know now, is there anything you wish you would have known in the beginning of starting your company and building it?
I think in some ways it's kind of looking back at the journey that we've taken, and we've had it's been a really, really fun ride how we've built this. And I think in some ways it's actually quite good that you don't quite know what's going to happen, because then you'd probably hesitate more on decisions because I think there's a lot with making decision making is that sometimes it's just better to make a decision than well on it too long. So just moving faster is usually better than not moving. Mm. So I think some of the bits that I think I would absolutely like to have done differently is hire more people faster. Mm. And being a bit more on it, that okay, well, a bit more confident in that, look, it's gonna be okay. And it's okay to hire for a few more people. And so I think that would be one thing, is to hire more people sooner. We're now 65, 66 people split across, mostly here in Scotland, just outside of Edinburgh. We've got a few people, good handful of people in Austin, Texas, and then also in Bonn, Germany. And I think those have been, and it's been a journey in hiring every employee here. And I think one thing would have maybe make this whole thing go faster sooner is to actually hire a few more people earlier on, have the confidence to do that. So
sure. So I know you started out, you and your wife had the ideas, but as you add more people, it changes the feel of the company. And now that you're at kind of that mass, I've seen a lot of companies we've helped over years that they get to that 50, 60 mark. It feels a lot different. How do you keep your culture strong as far as this company?
What builds the culture that we have? It's we're a values-driven company, and we hire based on those values. Mm-hmm. And one of the core values that we have that we look up to the most are there's things like we have like rigor and innovation are and ambition are, but also kindness and passion. And I think those two are the when it comes to hiring, they're the most important values for us. Like if we have somebody who comes through and we can't see the kindness in way they are or the passion in whatever they take on, then we know that this isn't probably going to work long term. And when we look at those, they've only a few times that we maybe have not nailed it, let's put it this way. There's not been many cases of that. And if we review the decisions that we made earlier in the process, is that we weren't true to those values that we need to live by. And we were like, well, no, but they come with a lot of experience, or we think they come with a lot of experience, or they're really hardworking, but they're not necessarily most passionate about things. Then we've always kind of found that, well, actually that's, you really need to keep a hold of those and hire based on what's really important for you. So
this time of COVID, mm-hmm. and how has it impacted your business? I'm guessing more people are probably looking for ways to stay at home and cook at home. And has that impacted your business?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's. I think there's not a business that I've heard of that hasn't been impacted in one way or another. And we know a lot of businesses here in Scotland, so we can generally say that we're very, very fortunate in how this has impacted us over the last sort of 6 months. The whole thing started for us when we started hearing from our supply chains out in China that we've got issues with Chinese government stopping people coming back from Chinese New Year. And there wasn't really, this was January time, so there wasn't really this big kind of like alert anywhere in the Western world, especially that, hey, there's a really big problem out in China at the moment. So those were the first sort of like hints for us that something is happening. But by the time that we got to middle of March, when everything kind of flipped for us at that point, we knew that, well, China, our manufacturing supply chain is actually coming back online, and they've been able to deal with the terrible situation in a way that they're now safe and able to continue operating. And then we have all the kind of news coming. We have many of our retailers are freezing their purchase orders and putting a hold on that, hey, look, we're going to review this on an ongoing basis. And so we're at this kind of bit of huge uncertainty that what's going to happen and what's going to happen to our 60 people that we've hired.
Sure.
And how are we going to continue this? And we had almost daily meetings on seeing that where are we tracking with cash and where are we tracking with inventory and so on. Because we also had, of course, at that point, we had our summer is, of course, unsurprisingly, one of our busiest times. So we had all the inventory coming in for that time. So it's too big dangerous for a business is that you have no sales, or you have too much, you have no sales and too much stock, or the other way around. So that that was kind of the beginning parts for us. And when the lockdown began here in the UK, the team has just been just amazing. They've taken on working from home and been able to, well, perform just as well, and in some cases maybe even better, in being in a distraction-less home environment. We're already quite a digital kind of company. We work through Slack, and we used to do a bit of video conferencing already even before this, but like all of our communications happens on Slack virtually. Even a lot of it happens virtually already, even before this. So it's just, we were able to kind of scale that up really fast. But I remember the day I was actually self-isolating at the time when the lockdown began. So I wasn't even in the office on the day. I'd just been in the US and found it best to be just, okay, I'm just going to stay home for this time, just in case. But people just left on Monday night. They took their laptops, took their screens, and they've been, it's been an interesting ride. It's not been without any I don't know, downsides or things that we, there's some things we might do differently. There's different kind of support that you need to provide for your staff. But as well, learning a lot in this process. And I think once the virus is gone, I think it will be sooner or later, it'll be gone. I think we'll be merging into a better workplace. Not that it was a bad place to work in, but I think there'll be more flexibility for people, and people want that flexibility from their employers. And I think we're really up for providing that. So.
Great. Yeah. I've heard a number of people say that their companies are going to be stronger once we're out of this, and that, yeah, you're right, that they've learned to adapt and figure out that they can work remotely.
Yeah.
Are there any books that you've read and that you would recommend for leaders?
I'm always terrible at remembering all the books. I read a fair bit as audiobooks, and I feel like that's the only way I can actually read is as an audiobook. I find my brain is going too fast, and I find it quite hard to concentrate and sit down to read. But I read as audiobooks. But there's maybe a couple, like I would recommend anything by Jim Collins, of course. His most recent one I that read from him was Great by Choice. That was a lot about talking about consistency, and I think that's a really good one. Then there's maybe not a business book as such, but there's a couple of books on Steve Jobs. There's particularly one called Becoming Steve Jobs. I would really recommend. It's a really interesting biography of his life, and by people who actually knew him from the early 80s onwards and had interviews throughout his career outside of Apple, inside of Apple and outside of Apple with Next and with Pixar and then back at Apple. So I think that's a really inspiring book to kind of look at a little bit more under the skin, and kind of challenge it a little bit about the picture painted by Walter Isaacson's book and the whatever the film was that was came out. I actually haven't even seen it, but they came out a few years ago. Yeah, those would be probably a couple of good ones to start with.
So. Great. So outside of work, what do you do to recharge?
I running. Running is my sort of go to recreation. I started running when I was 27. So before Uni, I got to 27. I was thinking, you know what, I'm 27 and I'm the unfittest I've ever been in my life. And so I decided to change that and started running, and nothing major, but then quite quickly actually started doing some marathons. And then when the kids were born, took a little break from marathon running, but still continued running. And now, especially up in here in Scotland, it's such a fantastic place for it. I always joke that we've been here now for five years, and I always joke that I wanted us to move from London to Scotland for the weather. and it's perfect for running. It's never way too cold. It's never too hot. There's lots of hills all the time, so it's undulating. I think perfect place for that. But yeah, that's my sort of go-to recreation. I try and do almost running every day.
Okay, great. Well, no, it's been fun to hear your story. And yeah, any parting advice that you'd give to a leader? We have people, a lot of our audience are in that 20 to 30 age frame. But what advice would you give?
I think just try and be true to yourself. Don't try and be something else. You can read books and get advice, and you can be influenced by those. But just try and find what you are yourself as a leader, as an entrepreneur, or whatever you are. If you're try and be honest to what you want to be, and I think it's not a very excitingly unique advice, but I think just finding what that is a good place to start, and that kind of honesty and trust in people is really, really important.
Great. Well, I've enjoyed your product and looking forward to seeing what you come out with next. Yeah. And I'm sure you've got ideas and thoughts of where you're headed as a company. Yeah. And be excited to watch as it develops.
No, it's very exciting. Thanks so much for giving me the time and a bit of platform to talk about this. I love talking about Uni. I love Uni, and the work that the team here is doing is just, it every day feels like we're doing awesomely, but every day feels like we're just getting started. And there's that feeling of beginning is just the best.
Well, I wish you the best and the success as you continue to grow your company.
All right. Hey, thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.